Deadbeat Scroll by Mark Coggins is slick, sardonic, and suspenseful. Everything a great thriller should be, says New York Times bestselling author Lee Child. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com. Chapter 27. Tag, You're It. I couldn't seem to get enough air. My pulse pounded in my temples like a pneumatic press, and the hand holding the Luger began to tremble, prompting Brendan to laugh.
Jealous? You can't have polyamory with jealousy.
I knew I had to move or risk losing control entirely. I backed out of the car and stood raging on the sidewalk, my head in the muzzle of the Luger the only thing still poking into the cabin.
You pig! Don't go away mad,
Brendan said after I began to do exactly that.
And don't forget the pictures, Mr. Reardon. Text me the pictures, and we can set up a time and place for the exchange.
I grunted in response, but he wouldn't have heard me. I was running by then. I went two blocks before I realized I was still holding the Luger. I holstered it and ducked under the awning of the 1920s Ben-Hur Apartments at the corner of Hyde and Ellis. Andreas and Brendan drove by a moment later, Andreas sneering at me as they passed. It was time to call in the cavalry. I phoned Gretchen to set up a meeting with her and Ray, but when she mentioned that the flood building had in fact been bugged, my paranoia went into overdrive. I didn't want Brendan and Andreas listening in on our conversation, and I didn't want them to even be aware of Ray's existence and his role in the case, which meant we needed a new place to meet. After a lot of back and forth, I hit on the idea of borrowing the break room at Kim's nail salon. Gretchen hung up to get Ray on board, and I called Kim to borrow the room. After covering the receiver to check with someone else in the salon, she said,
"It's all yours. Just be sure to slip a 20 in the tip jar at the reception desk, and I won't be around. I'm leaving now to do some freelancing."
I glanced up at the bas-relief of Roman chariots above the windows of the old apartment building. "I thought your freelancing days were over."
"Not that kind of freelancing, silly. I'm doing petties for a bunch of girls at a bachelorette party."
"But nothing for the bachelors."
"That's right. Thank you for your interest. Do I detect the slightest bit of concern or jealousy?"
"No. I mean, yes. Actually, I don't know what I mean."
"Bye now."
The whole exchange had been silly, but somehow it lifted my spirits. When I stepped into the break room 20 minutes later, my rage and paranoia had dissipated, and I was ready to talk rationally about getting Angelina back. Ray and Gretchen were already sitting around the flimsy card table, and someone had set the rice cooker and tea kettle aside. Ray looked up from the well-thumbed copy of Elle magazine he'd been perusing and said,
"Take a lot of your meetings in nail salons, do you, August?"
I scraped the last available chair out from under the table and sat down. "No, but you have to admit it's good cover." Ray made a scoffing noise.
"For Gretchen, maybe. Everyone laughed out loud when I came through the door."
"Boys," Gretchen said, "let's skip the grousing and get started. I think we can all agree the less time we're together, the better." She looked over at me. "You weren't exactly coherent on the phone. What happened with Brendan and Andreas?"
I gave an abbreviated summary of the meeting, nearly choking up when I came to the punchline. No one said anything for a long moment.
"Jesus,"
Ray finally put in. "Jesus has got nothing to do with it. The thing that really sent me off the deep end was it was clear they'd staged the picture to make it look like it was done voluntarily. I'm sure they were holding a gun on her, but you couldn't see it, and you couldn't read the expression on her face. Brendan was also dropping broad hints that, given enough time, she would join the family, like a modern-day Patty Hearst.
The poor girl, said Gretchen. We've got to finish this. The sooner the better.
No kidding, but first things first. We need to retrieve the scroll from the hotel, take some cell phone photos of it, and text them to Brendan. He won't set the time and place for the exchange until he's convinced we actually have the real deal. Ray cleared his throat and did his beard-combing ritual.
It could be a trick.
A trick? How could that be a trick?
You know what EXIF is?
I sighed. You know I don't.
It stands for Exchangeable Image Format. It's a way to store metadata about a photo inside the photo. You don't normally see it when you look at a picture online. You need a special tool or operating system utility.
So?
So unless you turn it off, one of the pieces of metadata recorded when you snap a cell phone picture is the GPS coordinates of the location where the photo was taken. It's called geotagging, and the information is commonly used on social media sites to automatically label the exact location of, say, your exciting vacation photos taken in the south of France.
But if we don't turn it off before we send Brendan the photos,
he'll know exactly where the scroll was when we took the photos of it. All you've got to do is type the coordinates into Google Maps, and it'll pinpoint the location within a few yards.
Then we'll have to turn it off.
Yeah, or we can clear it before we send the pictures.
But if Ray is right, said Gretchen, and Brendan is trying to trick us, it means he's still trying to get the scroll without freeing Angelina.
I slumped back in the folding chair, eliciting a plasticky squeak. Yes. And now that I think back on the meeting, all of his bullshit about the family and why people join points to the same conclusion. He doesn't want a trade. He wants both the scroll and Angelina. I brought my hands to the back of my head, cradling it while I tilted back even further in the chair and stared at the ceiling's grimy popcorn texture and drooping cobwebs. It's too bad Chris didn't make another copy of the scroll.
Why?
Ray asked. I looked over at him, because maybe we could turn Brendan's trick around on him. He wants the geolocation of the scroll so he can break into wherever it is and steal it. What if we send him pictures of another phony scroll taken in a place that we stake out? When he comes to nab it, we follow him back to wherever he's got Angelina and free her. Gretchen made a face.
It sounds pretty dangerous, August.
I don't think so. There aren't that many of them, and we would have the element of surprise. It would be a calculated risk, but it wouldn't be completely foolhardy. She flashed an impish grin that made me think of better times.
At least on the Reardon scale of foolhardy, you mean.
I grinned back. Yes, it's a little like centigrade in Fahrenheit.
All right, she said. But why do you need another copy? You can use the real scroll just as easily. It would be too bad if we lost the original scroll, but it's nothing compared to Angelina's freedom.
I agree about the worth of the thing. I don't give a rat's ass about it if we get Angelina back, but if things go south when we confront Brendan, using a copy as bait would let us retain a bargaining chip. We could still do the original trade as planned if we had to. Ray cleared his throat again.
We do have another copy.
What?
I made one.
When?
I scanned the scroll, the whole scroll this time, before I dropped it off at the hotel. Then I used a modified version of the teletype we found at the storage unit to print a copy.
So that's what you've been up to. He nodded. He was trying to look humble and keep a straight face, but you could tell he was pleased with himself. Modified, you said. How?
Your friend Duckworth had a good idea to use a teletype. It's like a motorized typewriter. Only problem is, the output doesn't really look like a typewriter. It looks like a 1960s computer. I fixed that. I soldered the letters from the strikers of a 1930s Underwood portable onto the strikers from the teletype.
Let me guess. Kerouac used a 1930s Underwood.
Yep. I read he borrowed it from Neil and Carolyn Cassidy when he stayed at their house on Russell Street.
I brought my hands up to clap softly. Bravo, Ray, bravo. But what possessed you to do it in the first place? You had no way of knowing we'd need a copy. He shrugged.
I didn't exactly set out to make a copy. At first, I was only concerned about the scanning problem. The reason Duckworth had to make a copy by repeating only part of the text from the scroll was it's so hard to scan a continuous roll of paper. I figured there had to be a better approach, so I did some research and found that one of my fellow old fogey engineers had come up with one for a completely different application, copying player piano rolls. This fellow used a capstan-driven transport designed with a single 300 dpi Dana CIS sensor and an MK4 hardware circuit board, all driven by a Windows...
I waved my hands. We'll take your word for it. So you solved the scanning problem. Then what?
Then I thought, well, why not print a copy with my scan? And while I'm at it, why not make one that would look even more like the original?
Gretchen reached a hand across the table to each of us.
Boys, as much as I'm enjoying this technology geek fest, don't you think we should get back to the topic at hand? Thanks to Ray's genius, we are blessed with an even more realistic copy of the scroll. How do we use it to bait our trap?
Let's think it through, I said. Brendan will assume we've hidden the real scroll in a location we think is clever, one that we believe he wouldn't know to search. So we need to pick a location like that and photograph the copy there, leaving the EXIF stuff in the photos like the dummies he's convinced we are. Gretchen nodded.
Yes, and this location has to be good for us too, doesn't it? It has to be easy for us to stake out without being observed.
Right. So all the places he's already searched are out because we would have found them too risky to use at this point. The office and the Post Street apartment. The hotel where we have the real scroll would be bad for another reason. It would be hard for Brendan and his crew to break in without being seen by hotel staff, and we want him to be able to get the scroll easily. But I think I know the perfect place. The storage unit. It's unknown to him. It's easy to break into. And it's easy for us to stake out.
No,
Ray said flatly. Why not?
I'm living there. Where did you think I went after I checked out of my hotel?
I shook my head. Another hotel is what I and the other 99% of the population would have said.
Too expensive. And besides, that's where I was doing all the work with the teletype machine.
Then I give up. Where do we put it? Gretchen sat straight up in her chair.
I know. Back to the place where the real scroll was hidden. 29 Russell Street.
You have been listening to The Deadbeat Scroll, a book the New York Journal of Books described as a glorious potpourri of violence, black humor, sex, and a hunt for a lost manuscript. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com.